Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Little Atoms, a radio show about ideas and culture. With me, Neil Denny.
On today's show, Michael Donker on his latest novel, Grow Where They Fall. Michael Donker was born in London to Ghanaian parents. He studied English at Wadham College, Oxford, followed by a master's in creative writing at Royal Holloway. His first novel, Hold, was longlisted for the Dylan Thomas Prize and shortlisted for the Desmond Elliott Prize. He is a frequent contributor to publications including The Guardian, The Times Literary Supplement, and The Independent. And today we're here to talk about Michael's latest novel, Grow Where They Fall. Michael, welcome back to Little Atoms.
Hi, Neil. Lovely to be here.
Tell us then, first of all, how you would describe this novel.
So, Grow Where They Fall is Kwame's story, and we encounter Kwame at two, hopefully, very pivotal moments in his life. So the first time we meet him is in 1997, where Kwame, who's this British Ghanaian 10-year-old boy, is working very hard at school, very keen to impress all of his teachers, very determined to be the best little boy he can for his very fractious parents. His sort of perspective is broadened when his 22-year-old cousin Yao comes over from Ghana to stay with Kwame and his family in Tooting in South London. And Kwame develops a really deep, very powerful affinity with Yao, and it's reciprocal. And the friendship between Yao and Kwame is really the heart of that strand of the novel. And we also meet Kwame 20 years later. It's 2018. And Kwame is a 30-year-old, a very successful, seemingly settled and happy English teacher teaching in a secondary school in South London. He's an out and proud gay man, and life is sort of bumbling along, seemingly without any bumps or anything of particular note, until the head teacher at the school where he works is replaced by Marcus Felix, who is a kind of dynamic firebrand of a superhead. And Marcus Felix really shakes Kwame up, challenges Kwame in all sorts of ways. And the novel is shaped so that we move from the 10-year-old Kwame's perspective to the 30-year-old Kwame's perspective in alternating chapters. And there are all sorts of correspondences between those two selves, I guess. And I suppose one of the things I was really interested in thinking about was the kind of maturity of the young Kwame and the innocence, perhaps, of the older Kwame.
Tell us something more about his relationship with his parents then in the young Kwame chapters, because they argue a lot and he sort of has this way of getting between them and trying to calm it down.
Yeah, he does. So Kwame as a child is, and as an adult in some ways, but especially as a child, is acutely responsive to the behaviours that he sees around him. And so he often finds himself in situations where he can hear his parents arguing or see them arguing or sense a tension between them. Perhaps there's a kind of a silence that's been present between the two of them for a long time. And Kwame feels often that it's his responsibility to manage that rift between his parents or to find some way of ameliorating or healing it. And the best way that he can think to do that is by being the politest, most sensible, least troublesome child that he can possibly be. And being able to do that and do that successfully gives Kwame often quite a sense of pride. But the novel, I think, is really interested in the cost that Kwame has to pay for always being this kind of upright presence, when actually we might expect and hope that children are messier, naughtier, wilder and freer than that. And in fact, Kwame's older sister, so Kwame has a sister called Akia, who is 8 years older than him, so she's just about to leave for university when the novel starts. Akia is really keen that Kwame shake off these shackles of dutifulness, this sense that he has to be this good son in order to kind of keep things in the family house serene. And she encourages him to be a bit looser than that and a bit more himself.
Tell us something about where they're living. So you mentioned it's in Tooting. It's a fictional building or estate called Richmond Court. So give us a description of what that place would have been like.
Yeah, so Tooting is a place that I hold very close to my heart. It's where I went to secondary school. And the Akramas, the family that Kwame is part of, the Akramas live in a sort of low-rise council block in Tooting, kind of in the Thursdown areas where I kind of imagined it to be. And it's quite a homely little estate. There's a real sense of community. So neighbours know each other. Kwame, in some ways, has kind of been raised by the kind of sights and sounds and the people of that estate. It's somewhere that he feels very at home. But then also that sense of home is kind of complicated when he goes and spends time with some of the middle class friends he has at primary school. So there's a moment where he goes to hang out with Francis, who's a little boy who's in the same class as him. And Francis lives just maybe 10 minutes walk away from Kwame lives, closer to Tooting Common. And Francis's house, Kwame kind of thinks of it as being like a kind of cottage, little cottage from a fairy tale that feels very different from the kind of British Ghanaian immigrant working class house that he grows up in. And after seeing Francis's house, which has a computer in it and a home office, because Francis's mum works from home, Kwame feels a sense of discomfort about the idea that Francis might come to his own house and find it lacking in some way. So whilst Kwame is very much at home when he's at home, as it were, often when Kwame steps out of the kind of comforting bubble of Richmond Court and encounters other lives, other houses, he looks back at where he lives himself with a more complicated lens.
So his cousin Yao comes to stay from Ghana. Why is he there, first of all?
So Yao, who is 22 and is this incredibly smooth and charming and charismatic young man, comes over from Kumasi to find work, essentially. So back in Kumasi, there's not that much for him to do and no way for him to fill his kind of entrepreneurial aspirations. And so he comes over to the UK, like so many thousands of Ghanaians have done, to find more sustainable work, essentially. Whilst he's here, he does indeed find work. So he works at a car wash. But actually, Yao's experiences here are much bigger than that. The experiences that he has are much more about the ways in which he forges relationships with people, particularly in the Richmond Court setting. He really fits into that world very seamlessly and beautifully and is very liked and respected by all of the Akramas' neighbours. And equally, he slots into the world of this car wash quite easily, it seems. And I think Kwame observes that kind of facility that Yao has for charming people and listening to people. And I think Kwame admires it and sort of wishes he had a bit more of that himself.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about, again, with the sort of caveat that, you know, this is one of the central relationships in the book and we don't want to give away too much about what happens, but tell us something about what effect his presence in the household has on Kwame.
So I suppose maybe the best way of thinking about what Yao does is that he brings a real lightness to the Akramas tense setup. So we've talked already about this kind of quite fractious energy between Kwame's father and mother, a really kind of intractable grudge essentially between the two of them that Kwame can't understand. And this sense that Kwame has to then walk on eggshells because of that. And what Yao does, partly because of who he is, partly because he's an outsider and hasn't been kind of conditioned by the kind of hostility and frostiness in the Akramas household and in their setup, Yao brings a real sense of playfulness. And he is able to make Kwame's mum not feel so kind of ground down by work and the expectations that are placed on Ghanaian women. He's able to, I think, make Kwame's father feel a bit more boyish and a bit more playful. He brings jokes and fun and a sense of silliness to the household. And for Kwame, I think he also brings a sense of possibility too. And equally, you know, that sort of paints Yao as this sort of golden messiah figure. And he is a kind of extraordinary and uplifting presence for everyone in the family. But he's also, he also kind of brings moments of challenge into Kwame's life as well. So when Kwame asks Yao what Yao thinks about the relationship between Kwame's parents, Yao doesn't quite give Kwame the answer that he wants. And equally, there are moments when Kwame has certain prejudices, I guess is the best way of describing them, about the life that Yao lived in Ghana and about Yao's father back in Ghana. And Yao is quite direct in the ways in which he makes Kwame reconsider some of those misconceptions. So I guess Yao changes things up, you know. I think at the beginning of the novel, in the younger Kwame strand, there's a real sense of Kwame's life being a very set way and the Akrama's existence being very kind of set. And that's very much disrupted by Yao. So he's a disruptive presence.
He also has like a real physicality and Kwame starts to notice this, and we do get the sort of beginnings of Kwame thinking about other classmates and other men on the estate and sort of starting to come to the forefront these sort of ideas that he might be different.
Yeah, absolutely. And that feeds into Kwame's desire to be a good boy and to kind of police his behavior, because he senses that these questions, this interest, this curiosity about male beauty and different kinds of male beauty is something dangerous, something problematic. And so his way of dealing with that is, well, if I'm really good and I get the top mark in class or I get the best part in the school Christmas play, then that will stop people from thinking about the fact that I might have this weirdness within me. So yeah, that element of the novel is really important to me because I'm really curious in my reading and in real life as well at thinking about queer childhoods and the ways that queer children cope, essentially, the ways that they cope with a world that in broad terms doesn't always feel especially welcoming to them.
And you mentioned him going to the his classmate's house, the boy Francis in his class. The boy has a beautiful detail that he wears an eye patch as well. tell us something more about Kwame's interactions with both his peers at school, both the other classmates, but also the teachers and how they treat him. And I'm thinking like particularly of like one sort of scene where he's auditioning for the future winter show that's going to happen.
Yeah, I think Kwame's relationship when he's a child, his relationship with his teachers is really kind of revelatory actually about the man that he becomes. So as a child, he's very, very keen to impress. So he's very set on figuring out what these adults, these teachers, exclusively white teachers, require of him, what they need from him in order to kind of get praise from them. So he's very watchful of their needs. And sometimes when they don't give him the praise that he wants, or they don't behave in the ways that he wants his teachers to or expects them to, he finds it very frustrating and kind of inwardly kind of upbraids them for not meeting the standards that he thinks that they should. I think there's also a real sense that he delights in getting those pats on the back, because home life is such a unpredictable environment for him. He really enjoys the comfort of easily being able to get that gold star for doing an excellent piece of work or saying the right thing in a class discussion. I suppose the flip side of that that's interesting is that, again, thinking about Kwame's teachers all being white, that there's a kind of objectification of this smart, upright, obedient black boy that limits him and reduces him in all sorts of ways. So there's one moment where Kwame's teacher is doing something about Mami Wata, who is a kind of mythical figure from the black diaspora, and she calls upon Kwame to pronounce the name. It's a very straightforward name. She doesn't need to ask Kwame to do it. Kwame's never heard of this person before. And yet she singles him out to take on this particular role. And Kwame instinctively knows that there's something inappropriate about this, but he doesn't know how to manage it. He doesn't know how to handle it at all. And there's so many complicated feelings going on here because he doesn't want to do the wrong thing. He wants to impress his teacher. He wants to keep his teacher on side. And yet he has this really profound, sort of inarticulable unease about the way in which he has been identified and singled out. And the reason why I said earlier that some of Kwame's interactions with teachers are, as a child, are revelatory in terms of how he is as a man, as a grown-up, is because that feeling of disturbance when Kwame's singled out for his blackness in ways that don't feel appropriate to him is something that he encounters in older life as well. You also asked me about younger Kwame's interactions with his peers at primary school. And they were so much fun to write because they are very honest about Kwame's sort of bitchiness, I guess, for want of a better word. So Kwame is very aware of his own talents. There's a good moment in a parents' evening where he sort of knows that his teacher is going to say wonderful things about him. And he's sort of lapping up the praise, but is always sort of a bit removed from the situation because he's sort of like, it's obvious, I'm fantastic. And he's very dismissive and disparaging generally about other students in the class who aren't as well behaved and clever as him. Equally, he's very competitive. So there's one character, I think it's Jay, who's mentioned very briefly, who is better than Kwame at spelling. And this is a real source of pain and frustration and anger for Kwame. There's another girl who's better or potentially better than Kwame at singing. And again, Kwame cannot stand this. So as much as Kwame, I think, as a child is warm and sweet and soft and is really trying, you know, he's a real trier, there are these thornier elements to him that I really enjoyed writing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're listening to Little Atoms. I'm Neil Denny. Today I'm talking to Michael Donker. We're talking about his new novel, Grow Where They Fall. And Michael, we just finished off the first half talking about Kwame and his interactions at school with both his teachers and his classmates. We're going to talk about Kwame in 2018 as an adult, as a teacher in a school, in a similar school, in the similar area. And of course, you were a teacher yourself for many years, so presumably that fed into these experiences of Kwame. And we can obviously talk about that when we talk about Kwame teaching at the school in a minute. But first of all, I just wanted to say, Tell us something about writing, I guess writing about the school life on the one hand from the perspective of a child and then on the other hand from the perspective of the teacher in the school.
Yeah, it was a really kind of fascinating experience kind of doing that switch, I guess. And what I was particularly kind of keen to think about was the sort of sense of performance involved in teaching. So I had this colleague when I was teaching years ago that talked about the staff room as being backstage. And I thought it was such a good analogy because it really is like that. So you've taught your lesson, you come in through that staff room door, you exhale or you shake off the lesson that you've just had, or you swear because it was awful, or you're feeling really tired and you weren't able to cry in front of your students. So maybe have a little cry, or there's a little kind of bit of office gossipy bitching going on somewhere. And then the bell goes. And, you know, you can literally see people as they kind of get themselves ready to walk through that door into their next lesson. You can see people's physicality changing and sort of their stance shifting as they get ready to assume this different role. And I'm really, really fascinated by the different kinds of performance that go on in the classroom. So when Kwame's a child, we can see Mrs. Gilchrist is putting on a kind of performance in some way. She's sort of quite big and maternal in a slightly parodic way, I would suggest. When Kwame himself is a teacher, there's also a degree of performance going on, in the sense that I think Kwame as a teacher is a much more together, light-hearted, at ease version of Kwame than he is in his personal interactions. So even though, you know, there's a kind of difference in the sense that in the child Kwame stuff, you know, it's really about Kwame's experience of being a pupil and being taught. And in the old stuff, Kwame's the teacher himself. That sort of sense of performance and the adopting of a self in the classroom was a kind of thing that ran through the two strands. But actually, as I say that now, I'm starting to think about how there is performance in the way that young Kwame is in the classroom too, because he is performing the role of the ideal student, sometimes in quite stressful situations. So perhaps, yeah, there's more to this performance thing than I had originally thought.
So now 20 years later, then, you talked in the first half about how Kwame was sort of treated by his teachers. So what has changed in the interim 20 years? How is Kwame as a teacher perceived by his teacher peers?
So by his teacher peers, and I suppose importantly by his students, Kwame is seen as the likable teacher. He's the kind of cool teacher who knows what the rules are, gets things done, but isn't a kind of stickler for protocol. He's funny, he is compassionate, and he's committed to his teaching. And that's very kind of evident in all of the lessons, I think. I think in terms of specific teacher characters in the novel that I guess are worth mentioning in terms of perceptions of Kwame, the first head teacher at the school where Kwame teaches, Madame Evans, she's called, sort of like Mrs. Gilchrist, Kwame's primary school teacher, has a very, objectifying gaze or objectifying view of Kwame, in that she thinks predominantly about him as being a Black teacher who is the right sort of Black to inspire her Black students. So that, I think, is quite an interesting element of the narrative, that when Kwame gets the job at this school, he's described in all sorts of glowing adjectives or seemingly glowing adjectives about his relatability and so on. And he very quickly understands, he reads through that code and he can see that he's being described in a way that a white colleague wouldn't. And so there's some discomfort there for Kwame, because he kind of wants to be able to reach out to his students, but he doesn't want to just be thought of as the Black teacher. You know, he is that, but he's other things too.
And so the new head teacher, Marcus Felix, comes into the book and is basically the Yao of the latter parts of Kwame's adulthood, has sort of a big effect on him. Tell us something more about who he is.
Yeah, I can see how Marcus Felix kind of seems to be the Yao of this part of the novel. I guess they're quite different in some ways because Kwame's at a different stage in his life. So, but we'll get to that. So Marcus Felix is a incredibly confident, self-possessed, self-contained, quite magnetic head teacher who has experience of working in difficult schools and often kind of turning them around. And he's a sort of celebrity head teacher. So there's a description of him going on Question Time and writing columns for newspapers, and he's had a book out and so on. So he's quite a sort of gleaming figure, and it's quite a coup that he is appointed to work at the South London Academy, which is the school that Kwame teaches at. And I really enjoyed writing Marcus Felix, you know, for a whole range of reasons, including he's really annoying. He's really annoying because he does read social cues when people are kind of frustrated by him or maybe don't want to listen to him, but he ignores them entirely to fulfill his own ends. He is big and he takes up a lot of space in the novel, quite literally. So there's one chapter which is essentially him just delivering a whole oration, a whole assembly to the school, and he isn't interrupted in any ways at all. It's just him talking away. And that's quite representative of the way that he interacts in the world. He takes up space, to use that phrase. He really does dominate in ways that Kwame simultaneously admires and is perhaps jealous of, but also thinks are distasteful. Kwame thinks there's something kind of brash about this, yeah, noisy, demanding, showy figure. I suppose a bit like younger Kwame, you know, younger Kwame being kind of critical of kids that he thought were uncouth. There's a similar kind of way in which he perceives Marcus Felix often. But I think what I wanted to show as their kind of curiosity about one another develops, their sort of prowling around one another develops, is that they have things to learn from each other.
Can we talk about Kwame's best friend and flatmate, housemate, Edwin, who is a friend from university, and his family background and Kwame's sort of experiences and interactions with that?
Yeah, so Marcus Felix was great fun to write, and so was Edwin. So Edwin is an upper middle class white wine writer, and wine presenter. Actually, he ends up doing a little slot on This Morning talking about wine. And he is from an enormously privileged background. So his father is a TV chef and owns this very extravagant, very hard to get a table at restaurant in the country. And Kwame and Edwin's relationship was a tricky thing to kind of construct, because I wanted to use it as a way of thinking about the kind of dangers of a certain kind of white liberalism, the laziness of that way of thinking, the self-satisfaction of that way of thinking. But I also wanted to show that there was love and tenderness and humour and history between these two men who, when we meet them in 2018, have known each other for, you know, the best part of a decade and seen each other through difficult times. They've both been really deep and profound sources of succour and support. So I really worked hard to get that balance. I also wanted to have a lot of fun with this friendship, because Edwin is able to do things that Kwame isn't. Edwin is, again, a bit like Marcus Felix, is kind of quite big and takes up a lot of space and is able to take the piss out of Kwame in ways that are quite fun. And also Edwin is able to lead Kwame away from this kind of path of propriety that I think Kwame might otherwise be quite stuck to. But there are also insidious things in that friendship as well that, as the novel goes on, I think come to the fore.
And can we also just briefly, before we finish, I'm going to get you to read us a bit to finish off, but before we do, just something following on from what you just said about Edwin, about Kwame's experiences as a black man navigating Grindr in the dating world.
Yeah, I think Kwame is acutely aware of the ways in which his blackness is perceived by a white world. And he's very experienced in terms of the ways in which he's, yeah, again, objectified. I think that word is just really, really useful in thinking about what the world does to Kwame's character. It kind of reduces him to his sexuality and his sexy blackness, or it sees him as a danger, or it sees him as incongruous within a white setting, or it tries to make him something that he doesn't feel himself to be. There are also lots of moments when Kwame and Edwin are interacting together out in the world, and there's an assumption that Edwin is sort of the authority figure of the two and Edwin's sort of running the show. And that's sort of not the case. And so, yeah, I think the novel really looks at Kwame's understanding of that, what he does with that, the moments when he sort of submits to it, the moments when he fights against it. And also those moments when he's playful with it. You know, there are moments when, rather than feeling subjected to racism, he finds quite imaginative and funny ways of working around that.
So to finish it off, can I get you to read us a bit?
Absolutely. So I'm going to read from the 1997 strand. So this is the younger Kwame strand. And this is a moment when Kwame has been walking through school, walking through a school corridor a couple of days before this extract, actually, and seen a big display about the slave trade. And this is the first time that Kwame has ever heard anything about the slave trade. And he is distraught and doesn't really understand how something as dark and bleak and awful as the slave trade could have happened without him knowing about it. In Tooting Library, after school, he sat on the corduroy beanbag Mrs. Faruqi, the librarian, kept aside especially for his visits. He wriggled his bottom into the squishiness and crossed his ankles to make it more comfortable. He was trying his hardest to read about birds from the big book on his lap that Mrs. Faruqi had recently got in. She wanted his opinion before she gave it to the other girls and boys to try. So he learned how ostriches have long eyelashes, and how emus only live in Australia, and that the little kiwi bird has an excellent sense of smell. The pictures were pretty, especially the close-ups of feathers, so delicate you wanted to pick them off the page and tickle them against your arm. And the information about how some men birds nurse the eggs was interesting too. But really, what was the point of anything now? Learning facts, being excited by the new book smell, thinking about his posture to keep his singing voice beautifully bright, like his teacher had said in their one-to-one. Kwame turned pages of showy parrots and proud toucans. He wanted to know how any of this mattered when the world had shown a bigger, more important, more horrible truth. That when you think you're clear about what badness you have to battle, and you get on with doing that, you actually know nothing. Nothing.
So I've been talking to Michael Donker. We've been talking about his new novel, Grow Where They Fall, which is out now in the UK from Penguin Fig Tree. Michael, thanks so much for taking the time to share it with me.
Thank you so much. It's been really fun.
This episode of Little Atoms was produced, presented, and edited by me, Neil Denny. Little Atoms is hosted by Acast and published by 89Up. The show is broadcast on Mondays and Saturdays on Resonance 104.4 FM. Thanks for listening.
Selling a little? Or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.